Hi, everyone. I'm so excited about today's episode of Beauty Bosses with my dear friend and amazing entrepreneur, fashion designer, and superwoman, Rebecca Minkoff. Thank you for being here.
Oh my God, thanks for having me.
I'm so happy that this is working out because we've talked about this for such a long time, and then we finally made it happen.
I know. I think we started talking about it pre-COVID, then obviously we got stopped, and then 10 kids between us, it's been a little hard.
Yes, I know. We have a lot of responsibility between us. 10 kids, that's something.
It's not nothing.
Yeah, not nothing. Okay, so I'm so excited to talk to you because you're such a fashion icon. I've admired your designs and style and kind of personal style for so long. I'd love to start by asking you, how did you become the Rebecca Minkoff we know about today?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's been almost 20 years. We start celebrating our anniversary next year. Well, actually, we're kicking off in September. But I have always loved, since I was the age of 8, when I was forced to not buy a dress but learn how to sew to make the dress by my mom, that I actually was upset that she did that and then happy because I fell in love with sewing and design. And as a painfully thin and awkward and bullied teenager, it was the place that I took to alter my own clothes, make my own things, and that made me feel a sense of confidence when nothing else did that. I was drinking as many muscle building shakes as you could, but no one told you, like, hey, guess what? That's not going to work. You haven't gone through puberty yet.
Puberty always helps.
Puberty helps, sometimes too much, because then I was like, boobs, what are these? But I really just fell in love with this craft, and I was a dancer, just to complicate things, went to a performing arts high school, and they were like, you're too tall, your boobs are too big, bye. Go to the back or go into the costume department. And I spent, you know, 4 years, 4 hours a day in the costume department learning the art of design and the craft and draping and pattern making. And so when it came time to decide to go to college or not, my parents had a very relaxed vibe and said, if you want to go to college, great. If you don't, start working. I decided I wanted to work. So I was able to secure a paid internship with a designer who's not around anymore, but had a business here. His name is Craig Taylor. And I made $3 an hour and I moved to New York and I lived with my friend at Fordham University in his dorm room. He would sneak me in. And that was kind of how I got my start. And I ended up getting hired. I worked there for 3 years. I launched a t-shirt, which became a thing due to tragedy, 9/11. That shirt got a lot of notoriety. And from there, I was able for 4 years to sort of barely exist as a designer, also a stylist, is what paid the bills. And then I launched the bag. And that is kind of what set everything in motion.
Yeah. Why is the bag so special? It's like such a kind of cult item and people know about it and associate it with you. Would you say also that it's your most iconic creation?
I would say it's my first or second most iconic creation. I'll get to the second one in a second. But there was a time when there was a bag at Target, and fast fashion didn't exist yet, really. It was like Target or Chanel. And there was nothing in between. And so I was part of this wave of new designers where it was a $500 price point, which was considered extraordinarily affordable, different today. And there was like five of us. If you remember, it was Kuba, Bakir, me, Foley and Karina. Kate Spade was just, you know, getting big. And so we were part of this new wave where a woman could afford a handbag and pay rent or eat out. And I think specifically with my bag, because I attached it to a significance of looking for love in New York City, an entrepreneur journey, that women identify their bags with a lot of experiences. Their first fill in the blank, right? Job, promotion, affair, divorce, whatever it is. And so that bag was the symbol of that. And so I think that's why it struck a chord.
And I think just on that note, this is something that's always struck me, but the reason that bags and shoes have been such a thing for female fashion is that they're a little size independent. They're a little body independent. You can rewear them a million times and people won't give you a hard time or tease you.
Yep.
It's okay to be rephotographed in them. And so they kind of function in a cost per wear sense a little bit more efficiently than a really statement dress.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool to have an anchor point that is something that's so multifunctional.
For sure. And you're never going to have the fluctuations like you have with clothes. Like, oh, today this didn't fit me, I'm on my period, or tomorrow does, or I gained a pound or two. It's like, it's a bag and a shoe. Always, as you said, fits. And just has more versatility. You know, a woman is buying 4 bags a year compared to apparel is constant because you're wearing it that much more and you need something new all the time.
Yeah. What led to your big break, so to speak? Was there a particular event or person or point of access or retailer that led to you becoming more widely known?
There were a couple of things. In the beginning, with celebrity culture just starting, with all of the trashy tabloid magazines that we all love to devour, at the time launching, a paparazzi photo of a woman wearing a bag could propel a brand. So, you know, one story I'll never forget was Cuba. Sienna Miller was wearing a bag. They went from like 3 million to 20 million in a year because of that one bag she wore. And so when I started, you know, that was how I knew how to grow. And I knew that I knew people that knew people. And so there was this very targeted activity of who do I know that knows a famous person that will like my bags. And I'll never forget this inbound email from this manager at, I think it was UTA, and she wanted a bag in a certain color. I was like, I'll give you the bag. Just give it up to your talent. And so she and I had this sort of deal where she'd give free bags, I'd give it to her talent. And then the bag started popping up on different celebrities of the time. And that was crazy good. And then the other thing that was another tipping point was we had a bag that was $295. It was our first crossbody. And the crossbodies were kind of a new category. The beginning of hands-free, because we have phones and we always are looking at them, was just starting. And I'll never forget, I walked by a really well-known New York City department store that is no longer around. And they had copied the bag to a T, but they made it smaller, right? Half the size. And I was pissed. And we had a meeting with them because they also carried the line. We were like, what, you know, I wanted to go in guns a blazing saying when they came in, like, why are you doing this to me? And my president at the time, she's like, no, we're going to make that bag that size and we're going to make it 195 and they can go F themselves. And we did that and we hit a nerve with a woman who 295 was still expensive. 195 became our opening price point that a college girl could have. And we saw our sales just like a hockey stick that year. And with the timing of the iPhone, you know, and the hands-free and all that, it became this thing that just was like a rocket ride. So that was the second thing that helped propel us.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So exciting. and it's been so great to see your growth since then. What are your favorite things to design?
Oh my gosh. I think, you know, I always, of course, have a soft spot for bags, but we just relaunched shoes after we took a small break during the pandemic. And so that's been really fun to get back into that again. And I feel like that area has been stagnant for a long time. And I think, you know, it's exciting to see what we can do to just make it fun and exciting again. And clothing is a challenge, just like I said earlier, right? You're dealing with sizes and shapes. And so I like challenges. So trying to figure out, you know, what does that customer want? And it's very different things than my bag customer. So it's almost like two separate businesses for different women that share a same aesthetic, but have different needs, if that makes sense.
How important are retailers versus direct-to-consumer purchasers for you?
So I think we've all seen the direct-to-consumer trend start to die, and it was, you know, we never abandoned our department stores, and they had, you know, they're what built us. We started with department stores because there wasn't anything else, and direct-to-consumer, I think, pre that whole shift was maybe 15% of our business, and now it's 60. But we like having that balance because, as everyone has seen, you know, these department stores have people coming in them every single day. And you have the opportunity to capture new eyeballs, new demographic, new customers. And so to me, it's, you know, the optimum would be like 30% in our stores when we relaunch those, 30% online and 30% wholesale. But I think you can't have a business today without them.
Yeah. Even though department stores are having their own issues right now, which is so interesting, where do you think shoppers are? If D2C is dead and luxury buyers are dead and department stores are dead, like who's alive?
I think it's that people obviously we know they love travel, they love food, they love experiences right now. And so I think we all have to get used to this. We started going 10 on a treadmill. You need to buy something new every day, every day. What's new, right? And social media really helped usher that in. And now people are like, I don't need that every day. So I think people are not dead. They're there, but they're just like, I don't need more than 4 bags a year, you know? Maybe I need 6 to 8 pairs of shoes, maybe. And so I think it's all of us getting off that treadmill we had to get on because everyone went on it. And now we're all trying to like sort of reset. And I think...
Are those average numbers? That's a lot.
What? 6 to 8
pairs of shoes and 4 bags a year. Is that what people do?
That is like what our data tells us.
So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then clothing is far more.
How much?
Depending on price point.
Yeah. How much clothing is considered standard upkeep of a wardrobe?
I would say 5 to 10 items a month in most cases, you know?
5 to 10 clothing items a month?
Yeah. But the average woman is not buying, let's say, Chanel and Stella and Celine, right? She's buying maybe 3 to 5 pieces of fast fashion, 1 or 2 contemporary items, and then maybe 1 investment piece.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a data scientist, but...
Okay, no, I like data. I was like...
You're like, tell me more, like, what are your sources? I'm like, only my own.
Just give me your citations and this is over. And I was gravitating toward the numbers part of it, which I just think is interesting from a data science standpoint. But what do you think good style looks like? And to just specify further what I mean, if you could build a wardrobe from scratch and you were assigned with, for someone else or yourself, like 5 key items that are must-have in a New York woman's wardrobe, what are the 5? And you have to limit it to 5. They'll obviously build it out. But like, give me your top 5 most essential, like cool girl style, Rebecca Minkoff style items.
Okay, definitely a leather jacket. You're going to have that forever. So I highly recommend that. A great pair of flat boots that are comfortable because we know we walk a lot. And
so much.
If you pick the wrong boot or shoe that day, you are fucked. You are limping or blistered or going into CVS to like heal your foot. That's two. Obviously, you need a Rebecca Minkoff bag. I think crossbody is still relevant today. I have a big tote with me and I hate that I have to carry it because I just feel uncomfortable.
It's the lack of the car trunk that makes New Yorkers like this.
Mm, terrible. I wish I had a car trunk here. That's 3 items.
Shit.
What would be my other 2? We make a great heel that has a great wedge so you don't have the pain. So I would say you need like a great statement heel. And then I'm obsessed with our leather cargos. So I was really anti the cargo trend, like hated it, hate everyone wearing it. And then when my team was like, we need a leather cargo, I was like, ew. And I was still losing my baby weight. And so I was really not liking it. And then when I finally lost all the baby weight, I tried them on and I was like, these are amazing. And now I wear them all the time. So.
Okay. All right. I like that. I feel like I need to go check out my closet, see what's missing, fill in some holes.
I'll come with you.
Okay. Yes. I need a personal styling appointment and just like a little regroup.
Yes.
Okay. Well, these are such great talking points. One thing that I wanted to ask you about is how you see this move away from fast fashion and like the cycle of constantly acquiring, you know, from these ultra, ultra low price retailers, these global retailers where you can buy a shirt for $7 and like, who knows who made it and under what conditions. And what's the backlash against fast fashion and how does it affect this industry? And how does it affect the constant need for newness in a retail calendar?
So I'm going to say how I feel about it, but I'm also a hypocrite. Just want to caveat that.
Okay.
Fast fashion is the largest producer of waste within the fashion industry. It is the largest, you know, violator of human rights. And yet we are all addicted. I have a costume party tomorrow night and I went to a fast fashion retailer to get this thing because I didn't want to spend a lot of money on an outfit that I'm going to wear once, right?
What's your costume?
The birthday party is Clueless inspired. And so I had to get like a plaid skirt and a little like
Cher or Dion.
I'm going more Dion than Cher.
Oh, okay. Cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we even look at up and coming designers or any designer who gets copied by fast fashion, right? She's going to go buy the cheaper one instead of the more expensive. So I think it is really up to the consumer to stop giving their dollars, even though, again, like I said, I'm a hypocrite. I went there the other day. And to invest in designers, invest in smaller brands or bigger brands that are taking the care to pay people fairly, to ensure great working conditions. You know, we had a See Now, Buy Now opportunity that we did for many years that was actually eliminated almost all waste because we were cutting to orders, right? There was never extra inventory. And so I think that it's almost this thing, it's like everyone gets off the treadmill of you need something new every day. Everyone has to pare down their offerings and just save their money and buy better. And it's a really hard conversation. But I think, you know, even on one of my last flights on Delta, there was a documentary about it. And you see that, like, the cotton workers in India are getting cancer from the spray that they're doing on the cotton to make clothing and how that cancer affects a whole village. And you're just like, this industry is so sick that this poor guy who needs to make a living for me to have this sweatshirt, right, is now dying. And I think that eats at me, and I'm constantly trying to figure out, how do we be more sustainable? How do we take more responsibility? We're not even in fast fashion, but how do we sort of do better?
What projects do you have on the horizon?
Oh my gosh. Well, let me name them. We're beginning to celebrate our big 20th anniversary in September. So I'm going to be booking a concert style event. I had a humbling call the other day with a band that I've loved forever. And I was like, I have six figures for you. And they're like, we need seven. And I was like, thank you so much. It was so nice to talk to you. Goodbye. So I'm working on that. It's taking a lot of my attention outside of design. There are some rumors that I'm going to be appearing on some sort of show filmed in New York with women.
Okay, that's so exciting. All right.
So that's a new adventure.
So people will need to keep their ears and eyes peeled.
Just do a quick Google search. You'll see what I'm talking about. And then my paperback I'm re-releasing next summer with added chapters. And what else? I'm trying to just keep up.
Casually raise four kids on the side.
I just raised four kids on the side. No big deal.
Yeah, that's going to just happen. what advice would you give to your younger self or to anyone who's listening and who wants to be an entrepreneur, wants to start a business? How do you kind of push through those difficult moments where you're barely treading water and not profitable into the other side?
A couple things. When I was just starting out and, you know, pre-children, I would say, you know, worked like a dog, never took time off. I worked weekends, I worked nights, and I was fueled by that. And the reward, you know, I wasn't making money, but that wasn't the reward. The reward was seeing my work get bigger and my business get more successful. In hindsight, I wish in my youth I had figured out a little bit more time off, not to loaf, but now, you know, out during the summer and you see these youth and they're vacating and they're enjoying themselves. I'm like, wow, it would have been nice to have my young time period have a little more of that. And then as I got into my child rearing years for the first three, and I only realized this after I had my fourth with a big spread of time, I very much consciously thought I was present for the first three when they were little. And now I see how present I am with the fourth. And I'm like, oh, I wasn't. And I thought I was. But every time I'd be sitting there reading books, doing bath time, I was thinking about work. I couldn't get out of my head. I'd be like, and now when I'm doing bath time or reading, I don't think about work. And I don't know if I could have gotten there, but I wish I had.
Yeah. So take that time passes and then you can't get it back.
You can't get it back. And so, like, you know what? You will not solve anything in that hour that you have with your little human that you can't do later. And so take that time and just tune it all out and just, like, be there and don't think about anything other than.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. And this was so fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right.